this latest episode of the Forever Bristol City podcast. It certainly was a nightmare afternoon for Dean Holden and his team at Vicarage Road, because the final score, it was Watford 6, Bristol City 0. Abject, shambolic, any other adjective you want to describe failure you can think of would be appropriate this afternoon. We got a few people in our live studio, Les, Dan, Green and Mark, that is, and Ian. Let me come to each of you. Just give me 20 seconds on what you thought of the game. I'll come to you first, Mark. So 20 seconds, quick summary. Then we get into the detail after. Mark.
City just showed no backbone today, no bravery on the ball in terms of passing the ball, in terms of tackling, in terms of position, in terms of organisation, and got what they deserved. And the bravery comes from the appointment of the manager to the execution on the pitch. And this club is heading backwards fast unless we make a change quickly.
Okay, that's your say. Dan, your thoughts on this afternoon? Time for a change, but very briefly to begin with.
Poor from start to finish. Scared to make a tackle. Too weak on the ball, too weak in general, and I think now's the time to make a change before we end up being in a relegation battle. And
okay, good summary there. Good summary there. Ian, your initial thoughts on this?
I agree with everything that's been said. I've got a solution. The solution is to clear out the coaches and Ashton and bring in Eddie Howe, Paul Cook or Nigel Pearson.
Yeah, all right. Wishful thinking there. And Les, your take on this. Brian Tinian said, didn't see this coming. I think we did. We've been seeing it for a while.
In my view, the fault lies completely with the management staff. You're playing a top four team. You've got Moore and Towler, who've never played before. You've got two centre midfielders who've never played together before. Both of them are very, very lightweight. I think all three of them should be binned out as quickly as possible.
Okay, I can't see that happening. That's what I put on O2. We can shriek as much as we like, but I think if they make a change in the wake of this, it's an admission of failure of the experiment. But if there is a change, then I think it's not only Holden and the coaches, I think it's Ashton has to go as well. But let's get down into the action. I'll come to you first, Ian, with the lineup. Famara Diju gets in the starting lineup. A few changes. What were your thoughts on the lineup, Ian, when you saw it named?
Well, I said before the game that if he plays a back three, whoever's shuffling papers, can you stop? If you play a back three, you can't play Taylor Moore on the left hand side. I understand why he did, because Taylor Moore has always been terrible on the left-hand side of a back three. So he had a good game the other night at Sheffield United on the right-hand side of a back three. But because Mawson's out for the season, we haven't got anybody else who can kick the ball with their left foot. Mm. We've got four central defenders fit. They're all very right-footed. So he pushed Taylor Moore over there. So you've got Taylor Moore, who's incapable in that position, although I quite like him as a player, and young Riley Towler. So that's up against the £40 million winger that Les mentioned the other night, Ismail Assar.
Yeah.
So that's not bright. That's just not bright. Now, the first goal...
We're going to the action in a minute. Just want to go through
all right.
The team lineup.
The lineup was that you've got a midfield where no one can tackle their way out of a wet paper bag.
Yeah.
You've got... you had no height there. And unfortunately, we don't win first balls because we're physically weak. We don't win second balls because we're physically weak. And the service to the front players is non-existent.
Yeah.
And it was today. So yeah. I really, really thought the setup was poor. I would have gone 4-5-1 put a player in front of each of the fullbacks and tried to get those players involved with FAM. On the break. And I mean, when people say, oh, well, there's no experience there, there's huge experience.
Oh, there is.
That
there
song.
Is. All right. Huge. Let me come on to Les. Les, Ian said quite rightly about Moore being played on the left. I mean, quite honestly, in reality, Mariappa should have come in on the right side, Moore in the middle, Callas on the left as the most experienced one and a better left-sided player, even though he's right-footed, than Mariappa. But at least to give Towler a little bit of support. You know, he is the captain, and we come on to leaders and what have you. But Ian was 100% right with that comment about it was set up wrong defensively, wasn't it, Les?
No, I completely agree. I mean, I mentioned on Wednesday that I was very worried about Towler playing against Saab. It was always going to happen because of how he played against Sheffield United. What he needed was some protection, and that's not just from the left centre-back. But because we played 3-5-2, he didn't have a wide man in front of him who could drop it and offer him support. And we had two centre midfielders, one of whom needs to get across and offer him some protection. One of them's Lansbury, who comes across to me as defensively lazy, and Masengo, who runs around all over the place. And that then begs the question, and I mentioned this briefly on Wednesday, I can't understand why he played Joe Williams in that game against Sheffield United when we had a bigger game on paper today, and he could have offered that protection. I mean...
Yeah,
Taylor Moore was the one centre-back I wouldn't have played there because he has, in recent times, been very, very wobbly, and Taylor needed protection. So I think they got it very, very wrong, both in terms of the centre-back and also the midfield in front of him.
Yeah, because what he could have done, he could have left Moore out and then just Callas moved across one and then Mariappa come in and then had Viner back there. That would have been a bit more solid than it was. Dan, up front, were you surprised that Famara got a start in the team?
I was a bit, Dave, yeah. Because
if you can speak up a bit, Dan. Can you speak up a bit, Dan? Somebody said they couldn't hear you. Were you surprised to see Famara in the starting lineup?
Yes. Well, I was, but I think he shouldn't have been starting because recently he's been poor. So I think it would have been better to have started maybe Wells, but I get it because of his height, but he's offered nothing in the last few games, to be honest.
No, he hasn't. Nothing.
He's, you know, leaving in the summer or what, I don't know.
No, Mark, the midfield, as Ian and Les have both said, they haven't got a tackle in them, Masengo, Lansbury and Patterson. So, I mean, was there an argument for maybe playing Nash in there? And as Ian was saying, and I was advocating, maybe going a 5-4-1 or something like that, because we were overrun in midfield, weren't we?
Yeah, we needed some tacklers. I mean, what he could have done, it's easy in retrospect. He could have put Mariappa's right centre-back and moved Viner into midfield. Maybe his right of the three with Patterson left of the three. But whoever he plays in there, and we found this for weeks, they're all brittle. None of them are brave. None of them can make a tackle. Lansbury sprays a few passes around, but most of them were going into the opposition. And when we did get the ball forward to Pham, his touch was poor, but there were no runners off of him at all. So it was easy for Watford to get the ball back and counter-attack and into so much space, as you'll go on to in the goals. For the first goal and the second goal, easily picked off, easily beaten, just players trailing in their wake, just not physically able to get to keep goal side of attackers, just too strong all over the pitch.
But is that coaching or is it the players' mindset? Because I think Chris Honor said this on Radio Bristol, we didn't concede that many fouls. You know, we weren't doing petulant little fouls like we have been.
Nine free kicks in the whole game.
All
we're
right,
just too soft.
We are. Let's get into the goals then. I mean, it was all going rat to rat shit after 1 minute, 30 seconds. On our left, their right, £40 million SAR, on a run, acres of space, cross, and then it was, it was a Taylor Moore own goal but it's been given to Semmer, 1-0, 1 minute, 30 seconds on the clock. Ian, it was all downhill from there, really. Your thoughts on that first goal and then the second goal when Viner's back pass, that was sloppy. He's done too much of that. So, Ian, you on the first two goals.
Well, the first goal was a straight 30-yard pass. Towler was up the field playing wing back, waiting to receive the ball. Taylor Moore was stood next to him. Well, I say next to him, probably 5-6 metres apart. So all he had to do was pass it straight. Saar got the ball, ran in, crossed it. It got a touch off. I think it was Taylor Moore. Spun up in the air and hit the kid in the chest on the line and went in. So a lucky goal in one way, but we were wide open in the other. The other ball, Viner could have taken a touch, cleared the ball up the field, passed the ball, done what he wanted. And for some reason, he came out with an outrageous flicked back pass.
Yeah, off the outside of the foot, wasn't it? Yeah.
Terrible error from a player that's been playing well. But, I mean, in fairness, he's been messed about. He's been put as a holding midfield player. Then all of a sudden, he's back on the right of the three and all the rest of it. So, you know, both goals were terrible. But what those that did, it set the tone for the match.
Yeah.
And it 2-0, and I don't know how many minutes had gone. I think it was about 14, 12 or something.
14 it was.
14. 14. 12, 14 minutes gone. We're 2-0 down. I tweeted, game over.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't see us scoring two goals.
No.
Whatever happened.
No.
And we're just too weak, physically weak. And you just need somebody who's going to come in, get the 11 points we need to stay up, 11 or 12 points we need to stay up, and then start again in the summer. He's got a head start because 13 players in the first team squad will be out the door in June anyway.
Yeah.
So,
all right, let's go on to the next couple of pieces of action. I'll come to you, Les. First of all, there was a rare sortie by us down into our attacking area, heading downfield. Pham tried to get the ball through to Semenyo. It didn't. It broke. And then Masengo was fouled by Chalaboa just on the edge of the box. Pato's free kick straight at the wall. That referee didn't give us anything. That was a bad tackle by Chalaboa, wasn't it, on Masengo?
No, it wasn't. It was a perfectly good tackle. He got the ball. His studs weren't raised. It was a perfectly good challenge that 10 years ago wouldn't have been a foul. So I completely disagree with you there, Dave. And Dave, don't ask me about goals 3 and 4 because there were so many of them. I can't remember what happened.
All right. Let me come to Dan. Dan, quickly. Dan, I thought that was a bad tackle by Chalaboa on Masengo. Did you think it was?
I must admit, at the time it did, but then seeing it back, he did get the ball.
Fair enough.
That wouldn't be a foul. So.
I'll stand corrected on that. And then just after that, we did get a corner where Taylor Moore's head had dropped, but nobody could get a leg on the end of it. Okay, Mark, I'm going to come to you for goals 3 and 4. Poor old Taylor Moore, at one stage, he could have been going for that trick of own goals. The first one could have been him. And then the second one, 29 minutes on the clock. Taylor Moore clears the ball behind for a corner, half clear to Will Hughes. Good player for Derby, doing it for Watford at the moment. Cracking shot, wasn't it? Yeah, but it took a deflection.
Well, it wasn't. It was a poor shot because what he did was he hit it with the outside of his foot and it was going way wide to the right. What happened was Moore attempted to block it, but as he turned his body, it hit his hip and flew back bent his right hand and dropped in the corner. I think he'd got a slight hand on it, but it dipped under the bar. So it was going nowhere near the goal, and the ball's been credited to Will Hughes. It was going nowhere near goal at all. It was going from left to right, and then it just flew back in the other direction because of Moore's deflection. So it was a fluke. But another own goal. I mean, it just went from bad to worse.
And then Brian Tinian, I thought he was quite honest, actually, and he probably thought, I've been here before, written his Swansea 2005.
Pink,
yeah, he was very pink. I don't know whether he'd been on the pop or whatever.
And chubby.
Well, that's what lockdown does for you. I was looking at myself today and this jumper I've got on, whether it's my shirt or my gut, I don't know. Anyway.
No, it's definitely you, Dave.
Yeah, all right. Okay. The one thing Tinian said was when on 34 minutes Pedro hit the bar and we had about 7 players in within about 5 yards of him, but nobody, he just had a free pop there, didn't he, Mark? Pedro, 34 minutes.
Nobody put in pressure on the ball, and this was the problem throughout the match. Already a minute went by. There's no pressure on the ball. Can't tackle. First and second balls were all being picked up by Watford in the centre, and Cleverley and Hughes were finding winning runners. They were able to pass the left, pass the right, pass from the middle, because they always have winning runners and their strong physical front three of Sema, Yao Pedro, and Sarr. It was just easy for them, meat and drink, just running into space.
And then it really was all over. I mean, at least we didn't have René Gilmartin with his commentary saying we can come back from this. Or the final turd of the field. We weren't playing particularly well. We were turdish in the final turd of the field. No swearing. The fourth goal, there we go, no swearing. The fourth goal, 35 minutes. That man, Sarr, 2 goals and 2 assists from him this afternoon. Easy pullback for Sema, Mark, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor was midway in his, he was out of position, and I mean, it was just down the side again, and crossed, and Semmer just made it for, you know, he just took it from the centre of the box, passed across again by Saar, and it six City players. I mean, Sins was saying there were six players behind the ball, and nobody put pressure on Semmer. He was just on the penalty spot. He just strokes it into the goal. It was easy. I mean, it was just men against boys. It was a question of how many goals are they going to get. Every time we go forward, you just pick us off like playground football.
Ian, half time came. What were your thoughts? I was just sat there, sort of just angry. I just felt angry because I felt a result like this was coming. I know I said to you before the game, I'd take a draw, and I thought, not having had one for 19 matches, law of averages, we might have just pulled one off today. But, you know, this type of performance, and Dan Bentley didn't really, he only had a couple of saves to make. This type of performance or this type of scoreline has been on the cards, hasn't it? Yeah, we've been lucky. But what did you think at half time when you had your cup of tea?
Half time, I thought we'd make some positive changes, and we didn't. We brought on a bloke that can't play left back to play left back, so we could take the young lad that was playing left wing back off. Who else? What was the other change at half-time?
Half-time, he took off Moore and Towler and brought on Nage and Mariappa, so I'm guessing he went to a flat back four then, did he?
Well, he went 4-3-3, but, I mean, Nage, something, nothing. Personally, I'd have brought on Backinson, who I thought did okay when he came. He wasn't brilliant, but he did okay when he came on. Nash runs around a lot, and he'll intercept a bit, and he's quite busy, and he does track runners when they try to get back. I'll give him his due, but he's not going to dominate a midfield in the Championship and win you games. I would have switched to what I did. I said at the start, I'd have switched to a 4-5-1 and just gone for damage limitation. I mean, you're 4-0 down. I can't remember the last time we scored four goals in a game.
No.
There's no way we were ever coming back. And no. They were so much better than us. It stood out by a mile. But
well, carry on.
Well, they didn't beat QPR the other week, and QPR aren't the best side in the division. So no. Why can they look that good against us? I mean, they're fourth. They're not top 15 points clear. So, and all I'm hoping now is that we can pick up the 11 points we need to stay up out with a 51 available. And at the moment, I really, really don't fancy us to do it.
No, I actually think we've got enough to do that, change or no change.
Really?
I really do. Because we can't.
All right, fair enough.
That's what I think. I mean, Les, half time. Did you, as they say, bother coming out for the second half? But
he came out tonight. Give him credit.
Yeah, he did. Did you? What were your thoughts? You know, when you had your half time cup of tea or whatever it was you were drinking, and then when you saw the changes that were made.
Honestly, when it's 4-0 at half time, I was thinking, make it 8, make it 9. Short term. No. Listen, short term losses for long term games. They get 8 or 9, the manager's gone.
Yeah.
Their hand is forced. You ain't going to come back from 4-0 down against Watford and we've been playing as poorly as we were. No. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would have liked us to see maybe 2 goals in the first 10 minutes and suddenly ruin the game. It ain't going to happen. So get 8, get 9, get the hand forced, and then they'll be forced to make a change. It didn't happen. They got, was it 6? So we're still in limbo, aren't we? We're still in limbo. We don't know what's going to happen. I doubt he's going to go. As for the subs, it's irrelevant because we haven't got the quality to bring on to make a difference.
There's a great saying, isn't there? I think, Les, you probably agree. It was rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, this thing about quality, which we'll come on to later because it all does relate to recruitment. I mean, let's get into the second half because you've still got 2 more goals to talk about. I mean, Dan Bentley, he let in six. And actually, I don't even want to do marks, but I would give Dan Bentley a 6 because I can't really blame him for any of them. Dan, and if you can speak up a bit, Dan, very quickly, because your audio is not that great, very quickly, Dan Bentley, would you fault him for any of the goals today?
Not really. If I was, I'd be harsh. I think they're just defensive and not closing the ball down quick enough. And then just getting in and scoring.
The only save that he did that I can remember came on 52 minutes, and I thought, here we go, this is number five, and he saved well at the near post from Pedro. But then goal number five did come on 55, and it was Ian Saar, 40 million player, class above everything else on the pitch. He powered past Masengo, which didn't take a lot of doing, really, I guess, and then powered it in from 15 yards to Dan's left. Your thoughts on goal four, and we'll do goal five as well with you, Ian.
Well, it was too easy for him, wasn't it? I mean, we're in the second half now, so it'd be goal five. We were 4-0 down at half time.
That's it, goal five and six.
Yeah,
cheeky so bastard.
He's put it in. He didn't have any. Let's be honest. He didn't have much to do, and he's put it in from the edge of the box in about 6 yards of space, because what we don't do, and I've been banging on about this for probably 2 months, is we don't close down. We don't get tight. We don't. I mean, I always remember Joe Jordan saying to me once, look, I don't expect wingers to tackle like fullbacks, but I do expect them to get in the way. And that's what our guys don't do. So we did that. The sixth goal was a breakaway. We had a decent opportunity on the edge of their box. They took the ball off us very easily, ran up the field very easily. Jack Hunt was, they had three against one. And the guy that put it in looked about 2 yards offside to me, but the linesman didn't give it. So, and by that time, I'm with Les. I'm thinking, well, if they could get another three or four goals and we get really obliterated, then they would absolutely have to act. But I think, you know, will they act? They should. Will they?
No, I don't think they will.
But will they rather lose, potentially, from everything I'm reading and seeing on social media, thousands of season ticket sales?
Because, well, that's the big thing.
People aren't going to buy tickets to watch this. You've got people who lost their jobs. They're on furlough. They've been made redundant. Yeah. The daddy, 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 da. And the football is going to come a very poor third or fourth paying the mortgage and going on holiday. Yeah,
when it is like it is. And then just to wrap up the goals, goal number six on 89 minutes. We were almost wanting it to come. I mean,
well, that's the one I said was 3 yards offside.
Yeah, well, he was offside, yeah. And Saar, as I said, two goals, two assists. And, God, that was a name to put on the back of the shirt. What was it, Sinkernagel or something like that?
Sinkernagel, yeah.
We did have one little bright spot in the game, which was Masengo's shot. There was a little, nice little 1-2 in the box. It was when we were 5-0 down, but I thought that showed promise. And Masengo, for me, he's one of the players that does seem to be coming back into some level of form, but that's against a very low bar. I mean, Mark, bit of an insult for Naki Wells when, with 5 minutes to go, he brings him on for a fan. Was that just to give him his appearance money to keep him sweet, do you think, or what?
Well, that's be the only reason. I mean, what's the point? I mean, you know, it wouldn't have made a lot of difference. But, yeah, I mean, you know, we needed somebody to hold the ball up front. City just, throughout the game, City didn't have any runners. Anybody who was prepared to pass forward or as Tinian was saying, and we could all see that, just play the percentages in the second half, try and, you know, hit it to the front man and play off of him. And that's how we could have played in a few games where we wanted to pass less, you know, against teams like Brentford maybe, where we can't compete with them in terms of possession football. We could play less passes, but you have to be able to have the runners to be able to make it work. But you also have to have the physical ability. We haven't got any of that, and that's the real worry is City can't compete physically in most of these games.
Yeah,
and we play teams like Millwall and Cardiff, who have gone 10 and 8 games respectively without a win, but they've outclassed us in terms of physicality and game plan. Yeah. And teams will look at us now and think City are easy meat, Bristol City. You know, if we just need to get in front, we can dictate the tempo of the game because they can't do anything. It's that is the worry. We've got the people who are managing the team can't lift the players out of this malaise when they go behind.
So which is what we've been saying. And the people on the bench, I mean, it was interesting. I noticed something on the bench today that Tweedledum and Tweedledee, that Simpson and Downing, were There was no dialogue going on. Then at one stage, I saw Pat Mountain with a clipboard talking to one of the players, with Dean Holden standing there with his hands in his pocket. So has he lost the dressing room, or are there too many cooks and all the rest of it like that?
Lost his coat, I think.
Yeah, Steve has put on here the senior players today. He said they were, by and large, a disgrace. And when people talk about, you know, we're playing with a weakened side, as somebody pointed out, you know, we got Dan Bentley, Hunt experience, Zach Viner isn't, Callas is, Nash is an international, Mariappa, when he came on, he's experienced, Lansbury, he should know better, Pato, I thought he was a passenger today, Semenyo, Raw, Diju, passenger. Les, do you think that the senior players over the last couple of weeks have stepped up to the plate? I mean, who's to blame here? Is it equal blame? And let's ignore Ashton for a minute, but is this the players or the manager? They've no respect for him. What do you think, Les?
I think a team is a reflection of their manager. And when Holden was employed, we were told it's because he's a good human being and the players are going to be popular with the players. And that's how we play on the pitch. We play like a bunch of nice guys. And unfortunately, at this level of football, that's not enough to get you to the level you want to get at. It's very, very simple. I think all the players have been let down by a complete inability to coach a set of tactics into them. It changes every week or every game. And I don't think the coaching trio have any idea as to how to set up a team effectively at this level. And I feel very sorry for the senior players in this team because they will get a lot of stick, but I think they're being badly let down by the leadership.
So do you think this business about coaching, because we've even heard D. Holden or one of Tweedledum and Tweedledee say we haven't been able to get out and coach them because of COVID, yeah?
Dave, sorry. Did you see Barnsley against Chelsea?
I did. No, there was a good thread on that. I mean, somebody put 2 minutes of Barnsley showing a high press. So they're making excuses then, aren't they? Dean's making excuses
rubbish.
For the people that are meant to be helping him, isn't he?
Absolute rubbish. There's absolutely no reason why you can't drill a team at the moment. You see it. How many teams are there in our league who don't have a form of identity? There's so few of them. You know you're going to get with Cardiff. You know what you're going to get with teams like Norwich and Brentford.
Yeah.
They are completely drilled. Wickham, they're the same, really well drilled. We have nothing. There's no sense of clear instruction and tactical acumen that's being spread onto the players. That's why it changes every week. We just don't know. Maybe it's too many players available. Well, too many different types of player available. I don't know what it is, but clearly, if we
we've had quality. Yeah. We've got, again, if you look at, we said earlier, and this Roger who was on Radio Bristol beforehand saying, oh, we haven't got a midfield. Well, I'm sorry, available today was Masengo, Lansbury, Patterson, Nash, Backinson, Palmer, and you can throw Callas into that mix. So we've got seven players that have had decent minutes on the pitch this season, but we've got quantity, not quality. And the only quality, we got an international and we got Lansbury and we got Palmer. So those three, you know, in theory, those as a three, a lot of clubs would be happy with that as a midfield three, wouldn't they, Ian? So what's going wrong? Why can't we organise the assets that we've got? Ian?
Sorry, Dave. Yeah. Well, why can't... I just went on mute there to listen to 3 and a bit minutes of Dean Holden.
Oh, yeah.
Saying all the same stuff he says whenever we lose. You know, I mean, you can, you know, if you want to play Holden buzzword bingo, we win together, we lose together. As I say,
to say to that is, there we go. All right.
He took Taylor off to protect him. Yeah, get that. Put Mariap on, who's experienced. He can't play left back, but he is experienced. I mean, joking apart, these guys are senior internationals. I lost a great deal of time, and I know it's slightly off subject, but I lost a great deal of time for all the senior pros at Bristol City when they refused to take a pay cut and they took a deferral at the start of COVID. Bristol Bears took a cut.
And they're on probably a third of the money.
Yeah, Mark Ashton and Lee Johnson took cuts. Now, okay, on one hand, you could say, well, they can afford it. Well, yeah, so could Thomas Callas, Nathan Baker, Jay De Silva, Casey Palmer, Famara Giju. I could go on. But they didn't. They would only take a deferral. At that point, I lost a huge amount of time for all of those senior pros as men.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, 30 or 40 people got made redundant who were on the minimum wage. And that stuck in my craw. I really didn't like that. And if I ever get a chance to tell any of the senior players face-to-face, you can be sure I will.
Yeah, well, we still owe Bailey Wright money, don't we?
Well, I think it at the end of the day, today was unacceptable. I've listened to what Holden said. Some people say fair play to him for fronting up and coming out. Well, that's his job. He's got to do that.
He
was interviewed by Robbins TV. And, you know, he wanted to be asked any difficult questions. What do you do? Well, we go back to the training ground. We work hard. Everybody's got to look at themselves in the mirror. I've heard it all before. And, you know, we did all that when we lost to Cardiff. And look what's happened. Since then, we've lost two more games. Sheffield United was a defeat, but the manner of it was,
It was poor.
But it was more acceptable in Cardiff, which was a very low bar. But this has happened too many times. It happened Millwall at home, Reading away, Cardiff at home. It just keeps going on. And I don't think between Dean Holden and the coaches that they've got any answers.
No, I agree. I agree with that. I agree. I don't think there's going to be change, though, but more of that in a second. Mark, players, has he lost the dressing room, would you say, based on the performance of certain players? And what do you think, my view that I expressed earlier in the pod about Callas, he is captain and he doesn't exude a captain's persona like Lewis Carey did, maybe Rob Newman and the like of that we've seen in the past. Yeah, so, you know, as some other people have said, they don't look like it hurts. You don't see them chastising each other when they make mistakes.
Yeah, it goes back to what Lee Johnson was saying about players needing a cuddle or something. I mean, I don't know about modern day footballers. Perhaps we're a bit naive, David, because we want to see more passion, don't we? We want to see more of the Lewis Careys or the Roy Kings, you know. Captains are prepared, you know, go round and bash a few heads and saying, "Are you really gonna settle for this? This is what we become, a team that can't tackle, that can't do the basics." And that's the problem with City. Unless they can, unless the coach or the assistant coaches, I'm calling them Faith Hope and Charity. I think that's probably the best name for him. Charity's the defensive coach.
All right.
If they can't get them to do the basics, where we've got problems, and we're going to struggle to get those 11 points. But that's. That is the only cushion we got. And I think that the way that Steve Lansdowne's going, hope they get through the rest of the season, hope, like everything else that they do, no bravery, hope we get to the end of the season with it. And that's all we got. Because if there were crowds in the ground now, can you imagine the atmosphere?
Well, it'd be empty. But you're right. Exactly. I mean, you wouldn't want to be trying to sell anything with a Bristol City brand on it at the moment.
Dave, can I break in with some breaking news?
Go on.
The squad has been fined by Avon in Somerset Constabulary £10,000 each for making an unnecessary journey.
Nice one. That's very good.
Can I use that? Hang on.
Yeah, you can have that. Take it away.
They were an exemplar for preserving social distancing in the face of people they didn't know in the opposition penalty area. There we go.
Exactly.
Either that or impersonating footballers. Yeah. I don't know.
Dan, and sorry if I'm being brief with you, Dan, but your audio is not good for some reason. But do you think we're too nice, and do you think the senior pros, some of them, need to set a better example for the youngsters?
Yeah, we are too naive. We're anyone's dreams to play against, because we just let them through and we'll give them no challenge whatsoever. And I'm a little bit fed up with it, to be honest. I just wish we're a little bit nasty.
Yeah, we need to be.
We're far too nice.
We need to be that. Tomo's put on here, Ian, you shouldn't compete with Michael McIntyre. I thought that was quite a good one, actually. But there we go. All right, look, what we're going to do is... There's still plenty to talk about on here. I'm going to do a few bit on stats here. Right, so that's 9 defeats in 12. Yeah. If you look at the last take out the first four games, because anybody who could attempt to defend Holden and anything that's going, say, well, you can't take away the first four matches because we still got those points on the board. But if we look at the last 25 matches since the first four, we've picked up 27 points. So it's a fraction over a third of the points. We've got 17 games to play, 51 points to play for. If we pick up a third of those, that is 17, yeah? 17 on 39, 56. I stand by what I said, that even if they just sit on their hands and do nothing, yeah, law of averages, we might still be okay. I mean, Les, am I being the eternal optimist suggesting that?
No. I think we've got enough points in the bank to give us a bit of leeway. But the danger is, the one thing about this league that I've seen over the years is momentum, isn't it? You get yourself into a bad run and other teams down below start going on a run, things can change, like with Hull last season. But no, I think we've probably got enough credit in the bank. Whether the brand of football and the potential of the management's strong enough for us to keep them on board at the end of the season is another argument, but I think we'll be fine because we'll pick up points. We'll get the odd win here and there, and that's all we need.
Yeah, okay. Ian, I don't think the change is going to come. Somebody put on the OTIB press release later, but that's just rumour mongering on there, I think, as there always are in these situations. But let's look at Mark Ashton. And I mean, he seems to be getting a lot of the blame at the moment for how things are, and that we'll never take that next step while he's there. Is he the problem, or are some people pointing the finger now above him and saying, Steve, show some cojones and get rid of your man and make some changes? And I made a suggestion on OTIB, which has got quite a lot of traction on there, that sitting on the doorstep for Bristol City, the 61-year-old Richard Scudamore, former executive chairman of the Premier League, who knows a lot about football off the field, yeah? And you could have a situation where you have somebody like him as exec chairman 3 days a week, a director of football, and a young foreign coach or something like that. Is that wishful thinking on my part, Ian, that that would appease fans and give something like that, you know, a businessman at the head, and give the fans something to look forward to when the sale of season tickets comes up on the horizon, which is very soon, isn't it?
I don't think they will sell any more season tickets with Richard Scudamore as a executive chairman, as you put it. We've already got a chairman, a bloke called John Lansdowne. I don't know what he does all day. Ashton would definitely go. Another bloke who should have never got, with his track record, with his CV, should have never got the job in the first place. Mm. And that thereby hangs a tell with saying, well, we want Steve Lansdowne to pick another manager because he's not very good at picking managers. Brilliant businessman in terms of financial services. But honestly, picking football, I mean, the last successful manager we had was Steve Cottrell. And he was picked, was it John Dole, Graham Dole? John Dole.
Keith Dole,
I beg your pardon, who, strangely enough, runs a recruitment company. I mean, would I like to see Richard Scudamore in there? Yeah, because of his contacts and his nous and his knowledge. Would I like to see him there instead of Mark Ashton? Yes. But what we need to do is get a strong manager in there, and you want somebody, but you want somebody who's going to answer back.
Well, this is it. I mean, that's the bit about answering back, because that's why Dean isn't going to manage up well with Ashton. And even Jonathan Pearce alluded to something in his commentary at Sheffield about Dean had said, you know, or Dean needs to learn how to manage up properly. But Dean is in awe of Ashton, isn't he? Or enthralled to Ashton. Would you agree with that, Ian?
No, I think Ashton's his boss, and we've all over the years, it's not something, believe it or not, it's not something I've been very good at. And I've left companies because I answer back. Not in a offensive, in a rude way. I don't mean it like that. I just mean stand your ground and do the right thing. And just because my boss said, well, we're going to do that, if I thought it was a really daft idea, I would explain why and then explain why I wasn't going to do it. Now, with very rich men, and I've worked for several, particularly business owners as opposed to CEOs, they don't like it. They really don't like it.
No.
You know, that can be life threatening. You know, you can get the bullet over that. So I would say that I think Dean Oldham's a straight guy. I think he's an hell of a nice fella. And I'd have him tomorrow as a friend because I think he'd be a really good friend.
Yeah.
But I don't think he should have got the job.
It was like giving.
We'd have all taken it.
Yeah, of course you would. It's like saying to the shift.
They'd have offered me the job.
Mark Ashton's the chief executive, and it's like he said to the shift manager, "Look, I'm going to promote you. You're running the factory. I'm doing everything else. I'm promoting you from shift manager to everything to do with manufacturing." And he says, "Oh, great!" And then he goes home and he pees his pants because he's thinking, "Oh my god, how am I going to cope with this?" But Dave Febbs, he's made a contribution on it. He said, "Split Mark Ashton's $550,000 salary in two, give the other half to a new CEO, get rid of the chairman, aka Junior Lansdowne, and give half to a proper director of football." I mean, Mark, there's going to be some cuts in costs, and having a £500,000 chief executive when everybody is either out of contract and staff have been made redundant or taken pay cuts, this whole look at costs of football, well, it's not only Bristol City, it's every club, but, you know, is that a good suggestion from Dave? Spend the money in a different way? Because he must be as expensive as some of the players now, the Mark Ashton, mustn't he?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's a great idea. I mean, when you're making the number of people they are redundant, who probably are minimum wage, it's much easier to cut those people than it is, you know, to fall on your sword or for Steve, you know, to make that change. But he's not giving value for money. He's got to justify his job in terms of the results on the pitch. And in terms of his recruitment, and of course his big problem is he's not going to sell any season tickets on the back of the, you know, he can't convince fans that both our style of football and the manager are going to see us bounce back next season. And yeah, he's the problem. He's the problem as well. The manager's there because he would have been one of the key people in the appointment with Steve Lansdowne. Mm. So I think they both need to go now before the club goes backwards. Because we got, you know, a new manager would steady the ship. Wouldn't expect him to perform miracles until he was able to recruit his own people. There would need to be some sort of change in the management structure, because I think that was the reason why Houghton and Cook didn't get the job in the first place, because they were told they had to work under Ashton and there were limitations in terms of their power. So there's got to be a tweak there as well, because everything at the moment is a mess. They've just thrown money at it. Everything's just done on a whim and a wing and a prayer and hope. No ability.
Let me ask Les. I mean, Les, is Mark Ashton the Cruella de Vil in all of this? You know, because he's inveigled himself. He's so into, because if they did get rid of Holden and Ashton, right, I mean, this is a £16 million turnover business, and I don't know if there's anybody else. Usually, when the chief exec goes, it falls to the finance director to chew it over. And there's probably some good administrators there behind the scenes at Ashton Gate. But Les, do you think, you know, we've got to swallow two pills, or Lansdowne has to swallow two pills, or do you agree with me? It ain't going to happen, and it certainly ain't going to be both. And if Ashton gets rid of Holden, he'll bring his mate Appleton in, won't he? Because that's been mooted three or four times over the years.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think Lansdowne will get rid of Ashton. I watched an interesting interview with the Brentford CEO, John Varney, who's someone I knew about 10 years ago. And he was doing a fans forum online. And it's on YouTube. So if you type it in, John Varney, Brentford. And it's interesting because he's not a football man. He never has been a football man. What he is a very, very good businessman. And he takes care of the business side of things. He's interested in commercial aspects of the football club and money in relation to that. Whereas Ashton wants the power, doesn't he? He wants to be involved in the football side of things. And the problem is, if we get a manager who isn't a yes man, that's going to impact on him in a negative way, because then they'll start kicking off about Ashton and the amount of power he has. We need a CEO who's going to focus on the business side of things, not on the football.
Which is where which is where bringing the name back in, which is where Richard Scudamore, right, as that figurehead at the highest level, somebody put a response to my post on Twitter. If Richard Scudamore phones up the chief exec at Liverpool and says, look, can we talk about maybe a loan player? They say, oh, Richard Scudamore, no, Mark Ashton phones up. Who? Who are you? Yeah. Sort of thing.
But
so
also,
he's got some gravitas in the game, hasn't he?
Yeah, but also Richard Scudamore isn't going to go and say, I like this player. Because he's going to be so busy focusing on the finance, which he's going to be focusing on his area of expertise.
Well, finance and commercial. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas Ashton does the finance. He does some whatever scouting, recruitment, whatever he's leading there. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but he's clearly got a few fingers and a few pies in that aspect of the club as well. He's got too much power. He's got too much responsibility. And unfortunately, the reason it don't sit well with fans is because he's very swarmy as well. You watch him speak and you feel like you're listening to a politician. So for me, don't get me wrong, listen, I don't think we're going to progress until he goes. Because if you look at the top clubs of Brentford's and Norwich's, they've got such a clear philosophy that runs all the way through the football club. And none of them have someone like Mark Ashton in their business. So I can't see Lansdowne getting rid of Ashton. I think the sooner he goes, the better. And then,
but it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
No, I mean, okay, look, I think we've done today to death. Nothing's happened tonight. We've got to look forward now to Tuesday night against Reading. And I think Steve or Tomo put on here, you know, lose at Reading, draw against Barnsley. Yeah, you wouldn't back us on current form to get anything out of the next two home games, which is followed, I think, by, is it Middlesbrough and Swansea away? But let's look forward to Reading on Tuesday. Ian, my Brentford friend was telling me this week, Dave, the Brentford fan, they went up to Reading. They won 3-1. Ivan Toney, 15,000 a week he's on, which is pretty compatible with what we seem to be paying our players, so we are told, or so I'm led to believe. He certainly wouldn't have got 23 goals playing for us. But he told me that Reading, they've got the guy Puskas and Yao, who are on 52 grand and 38 grand a week, respectively. Now, Reading, they're going to have a bit of a blinking problem if they don't get up this year playing wages like that, aren't they?
Yeah, they will probably have to sell their ground to the owner, which seems to be the way that things go. Reading have got an extremely high wage bill. I think it's about 25-30% higher than ours. Mm. And they've got people earning a great deal of money. And it's not a secret throughout the game that if they don't get promoted, there's going to be a fire sale and they'll be in serious trouble. So there'll be a Derby, a Birmingham, who was the other one that got in a lot of trouble, Sheffield Wednesday. So it's said that, I don't know it for a fact, but it's said that that's going to happen. And if you look at I went through their wages once, I think with Dave Fevs, and Dave Fevs said, well, their wage bill is X more than ours, and it was a lot. But this thing about paying wages, if we just get it clear that the season that Sheffield United got promoted, we did the double of them over them, but their wage bill was 2/3 of ours. So let's not have this, oh, you can only get promoted if you spend a fortune. Mm. You don't. When we played Norwich, our team cost something like 6-7 times as much as theirs in transfer fees. Now, they might have been paying a little bit more in wages, but if you don't pay out millions, if you look at the lads we signed from Chelsea, Callas, 8 million, Jay De Silva, 2 million, Palmer, 3.5. Do you think we could get 13.5 million for them even without COVID?
No.
Because I don't. So, and I think they're on good money, and we had our trousers pulled down. And the guy in charge of that is Ashton. So Dean Holden they'd say to Dean Holden, do you want Jay De Silva or Lee Johnson, as it was at the time? And he'd say, yes, please. So they'd sign him. But the negotiation of wages or anything is Holden, and he gets, Ashton, and he gets a budget from Lansdowne. So, you know, but they're not the only ones. I mean, we need, we need to have some success. Because we still depend a lot on season ticket sales, and everybody that I converse with on social media or personally is saying, I'm not going to buy a season ticket. So, you know, whether it's all bluster and bull, I don't know, but it is pretty toxic at the moment.
But getting back to the Reading game, and before we do that, somebody's been saying about, do Bristol Rugby have somebody similar to Mark Ashton? And their chairman is the original rugby club chairman, which is a guy called Chris Boy. And then I think Mark Tainton plays the role of, is it administrator? Is he chief exec? Yeah. But not with the same, I don't see Mark Tainton telling Pat Lamb what to do somehow. But back to Reading, Ian. I mean, do you hold out any hope for us? I think they only drew at home today, didn't they, Reading? Yeah?
Lost to Millwall.
Did they?
They lost to Millwall. No, I think we'll lose.
You think we'll lose?
Irrespective of what side we put out, I just don't think there's enough passion, pace, strength, power in our team that we would need to win the game. They've lost today. They'll be looking to win and get on the front foot. We don't get on the front foot. We don't win first ball, second ball's closed down. So yeah, all the passion stuff is gone. And I think if the fans were actually inside the ground, they'd be getting pelters. You imagine if 2,000 or 3,000 had gone up to Watford today.
Oh, yeah.
I think they'd be getting pelters. And rightly so. They cannot expect... I mean, I said to you what I'd do. I'd put, until such time as we can get the managers I named in, and they're all unemployed. And when people say, oh, well, they wouldn't want the Bristol City job, they're all out of work.
Yeah.
And no, they would how do many that. Other clubs have got a multi-billionaire chairman, a brand spanking new shiny training ground, and a really nice stadium where, you know, 25,000 people turn up every week?
Yeah, well, you know, I think clubs, they're going to struggle again. Never mind coming back after COVID, because football crowds and everything for the foreseeable future. It'll be interesting to see how much gates in football in general will be affected, because I think we'll be back in August, but I think it'll be on restricted crowds. And I can't say that I fancy that. I mean, Dan, do you hold out any hope for us against Reading? I mean, they're coming to us on the back of two defeats. They'd had a good run prior to that. Do you see them maybe expecting to... Well, they'd expect to turn it around against Bristol City on current form, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I expect us to lose, David, if I'm honest. I just think there's not enough about us to get anything. So I think we'll lose.
Another defeat there. Les, your thoughts on Tuesday night against Reading? They started like a train. They had a bad patch. They've had a good run, although they've lost the last two. It's a must-win game for Dean Holden's credibility as much as anything else, isn't it?
Well, I mean, in any game of football, anything can happen, can't it? So, you know, we could play really poorly, get smashed to bits like we did against Forest earlier in the season, and then nick a 1-0 win. Personally, I hope we get smashed to bits, to be honest with you. Because then, again, that then seeds further.
It's a catalyst for change, isn't it?
It's a catalyst for change. Like I said earlier, short-term losses for long-term gains. If we've got to lose a couple of games badly, that means change will happen. Then I'm more than happy for that to happen. So I don't get a lie. It don't make me a bad fan. Being honest with you,
because you don't want a win would save him, but realistically, you can't see us breaking out of this in a meaningful way.
The problem is if we win on Tuesday, we can then lose the next 4 or 5 games because he's won against Reading. He'll be given more time.
Yeah.
It's a negative mindset, but I think it's reality. Sometimes you've got to take the losses and hope that change happens. Because if we were at the bottom of the table, it'd be different because we're fighting for survival. We ain't going to go up. I don't think we're going to go down, even though we're on a slippery slope. So we got time to play with. So that's my view. I hope we get smashed to bits. That's the honest truth. That's the truth.
And Mark, your thoughts on Reading? I mean, it's a local derby of sorts, isn't it? Yeah, the men from down the M4 corridor. What do you think?
I think they'll have too much for us. I mean, they've got that Elise, who's on the right side of their they play 4-2-3-1. He's on the right of the three. He's 18 years old. Outstanding player. I think young player of the season, really, in the championship. And Lucas Jow, who can play with his back to goal, came from Sheffield Wednesday. And he does go in and out of games, but, you know, he scored that goal against us at the end that tied it up. It's at the Medeski. And I think they'll have far too much for us. But I'm looking at Steve Lansdowne. Steve, if you're brave enough, make the change now. Because, you know, how are you going to sell your season tickets next season when it finally comes around? How are you going to, you know, are you going to convince the fans that you're taking the club to the next level, that we're going anywhere except backwards? You said the point in Dean Oldham was we're going to take the club to the next level, or Ashton said that. That was the idea. You're not. You're letting us down. And I think the other problem with COVID is we got access, much more access, to watching live games. We can see when we play badly how shambolic we are live. Yeah. And exclusive every single week. That's
we're seeing the away games as well now, aren't we? Because six defeats on the spin away from
seven, we've only scored
in the last six, though, isn't it? Yes, is that
we've
right?
scored three goals in those seven away games. One of those was an own goal against Luton, and the two goals we got against Brentford. Brentford will play a game like it's basketball because they know they'll score more goals than you. And they pass and move the ball well, and you know they defend well at the back, and they got three players at the up front who will score goals in a good midfield. So they'll outrun and outplay you to beat you. They don't care. They're better than the opposition. But if you didn't make that change now and we carry on like this, we're gonna mess up.
Go on.
But Mark, why didn't they do that in Millwall today then? Because Millwall isn't the best side in the world. So if they're that good, and I'm not saying, you know, they were far better than us up when we played them at the Badeski. So how come Millwall beat them, and how come West Brom beat Watford? Not West Brom, QPR. Sorry, beat Watford. What? How come that? And because these sides are so good when they play us, they're unplayable. But oh wow.
Because we can't organise, and we haven't got players with any belief. So we can't pass the ball forward.
It's about us, not them. Would you agree?
Yeah, but anybody, all right. Perhaps I'm building the opposition up too much, but I think when they play us, we're a pushover at the moment.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, mate. But what I'm saying is it's about what we do. It's not about, oh, they're brilliant, because otherwise, you know, if you look at that, if you look at the league table, you'd never go in, you wouldn't put a side out. You'd have said today, well, look, to Watford, look, you have the points, and we won't turn up. Yeah. So these other clubs, I think they go, the point I'm making is I think they go with a method of play and a spirit.
Yeah.
And they get it right. I mean, it can't be a coincidence. Naki Wells was scoring goals for fun for QPR.
Well, he got 20, I think, by this time last year.
Yeah, he's playing down the middle, wasn't he?
Can't score goals for us. Why? Well, when I say he can't score goals, he hasn't got that many. But why? What is it Naki Wells? Is he suddenly a different bloke? No, he's not.
The thing is, it's
just the way we play.
Yeah. I'm just so resigned.
To the fact that we're not putting in our honest performances on the pitch, and we just haven't got a clue that, you know, I'm just resigned to us losing at the moment unless something changes in the mindset.
But what you're saying is quite right, Mark. It's about us. You've got no faith in us. It's not that Sheffield that Reading are wonderful and Zhao is 10 times as good as Zizou. And they got the lad from Chelsea on loan, and they got Puskas in midfield. You know, it's not that. We've got that to contend with. But if the players are thinking like that, we're beat before we go on the field.
I tell you what,
we might as well not turn up.
I reckon the players are probably thinking, I wonder what formation we're going to play on Tuesday. I wonder what position I'm going to play in on Tuesday. Because we don't have any consistency. It changes every week. The structure changes. The defensive shape changes. Individual roles changes. So how are they supposed to have any consistency in their performance if everything's changing every 5 minutes? And again,
whatever formation you play, the players have still got to run. They've got to tackle, and they've got to win first and second balls. So that much of it, playing Taylor Moore at left centre back.
Well, that was just ridiculous. That was ridiculous.
Keeping the side, that's his fault. But what I'm saying is, if I don't see players in that side who can win first ball, second balls, or tackle. And if you can't do that, how do you win a game of football?
Yeah. True. It's back to recruitment, isn't it? That we've got all this bloated squad, and where's our DNA? Because that was the mantra that was being put out by Ashton. Oh, we signed players with the right DNA. Well, the DNA here seems to be lily-livered, nice bloke, non-tacklers, doesn't it?
The other problem is, David, how are you going to expect Mark Ashton and Dean Holden to rebuild the squad when we turn over those players in the summer? How can anybody, you know, the fans are going to say, we can't trust you to do that? That what you've done before.
Well, this is the thing. This is the thing with the players out of contract. Now, I think I put this on an OTIB thread. The players are out of contract. If I'm Hunt, let's say Hunt as an example. If I'm Hunt and I'm at Bristol City and I'm 31 and I'm on 10 grand a week at Bristol, 12 grand a week at Bristol City, and I'm thinking, shit, I'm out of contract. Now, I might be able to get 12 grand a week at a northern club like Barnsley. I don't see them signing it. I might be able to get 12 grand a week at there and a signing on fee, but I might not. I know my agent, I'll come to Bristol City and I'll say, make me your best offer now as a contract. And I don't think we're even choosing to talk to any of the players, are we? So why are they going to bust a gut when they know they're out the door? Why should Jack Hunt bother for us if he knows he's out of work at the end of June?
Why should anybody? Because we've got 11 out of contract. And don't forget, we also lose the players on loan. So we've already lost Mawson.
Yeah.
And we'll also lose Sessegnon. So that's 13 straight out the door.
Yeah.
So we've the squad's 38 and there's 8 players who've never started a championship game of the ones that's left. So work it all out, and we've got about 13 experienced pros to pick from and the kids.
Yeah.
And bear in mind that 2 of those are goalkeepers.
Yeah. Yeah. Red supporters put on here, the players we have don't want to be playing for City. Sad but true. That's why there was zero effort today. Play all the Bristol-born academy kids. I think if we did that, they probably would get smashed, but we certainly got smashed today. And that was with a good fair number of experienced players. Guys, we've just done our just over the hour, which is great. We knew it'd be a lively pod. We've had, I don't know what some of these scores mean, but we've had an engagement score of 1,256. So I think that's people hitting a button saying they agree with what we say. At one stage, we had 160 people in the audience. That's individual listeners. They're not all online now. So thank you for everybody who's been listening. I don't think there's going to be anything happening before the Reading game. Yeah. If there is anything that happens, we'll have a special pod for doing that. But we'll be back on Tuesday night after the Reading game. As I say, I don't think changes are going to be made unless if we only picked up 1 point from the next 2 home games and then lost at Swansea. I think that's the sort of sequence that might prompt it. You never know. I might be wrong.
Just to break in, Dave, sorry, Brian Tinian has just posted, found Robin's TV sad and upsetting.
Yeah.
He looked like somebody had drained all the life out of the bloke. He looked like he did at the end of that when he was sat in the dugout at
the
end of that.
That was the face that he had, the 7-1 at Swansea. 7-1 at Swansea, September 2005. Steve made a good point. I said this to somebody the other day, actually, when we were going out to Brentford. The way forward is to claim COVID, not turn up for the rest of the season and take 3-0 rulings. That will keep the goal difference down. I think that's a bit extreme. But
I don't know. It's not as daft as it sounds.
Maybe Steve Lansdowne just wants to run a very successful League One club. And who knows, he might even bring back Steve Cottrell and Aaron Wilbraham. And if he did bring back those two, I don't think there'd be a single... I think the majority of supporters would think...
You know that saying, David? How do you make a small fortune out of a football club? You start with a large one.
Yeah. But I have to say, I think we all wish Steve Cottrell very well. He's still in hospital.
He's been there, what, a month? Yes,
40 days. 40 days.
40-odd days. Yeah.
No, and it was good to see him get one. I think he was doing his half-time team talk from the dressing, from his hospital ward. And they got one over on Little Lee's boys. But Little Lee's boys got a win today, 4-1 the last time I looked. And he had a goal scorer with 4 goals in there. And what I did see on the Sunderland fans forum today, that I think he played a few kids, which he hasn't done in the past. But look, there we go. We're done tonight. Les, thank you. Ian, thank you. Dan, thank you. Mark, thank you, as always. Thanks to all the listeners. Have a great rest of evening. I've got my first COVID jab tomorrow because I live in North Somerset. So
and you're old.
And I'm old, yeah.
I remember, David, there's one thing I've got to say. Remember, listeners, don't have nightmares.
Yeah.
Thanks. So Jimbo's just made a comment on there. Thanks for sorting this pod out. What he means there is our sound was shit in the past. But with pubs and grounds closed, it's good to hear football talk. Well, you might not agree with everything we say, but thanks for all those who put little text messages. At least now that I've got my internet right, I can sort of not feel as on edge as I used to. And I've tried to pick up on what some of the people have said. But have a great Saturday. And my jab's at 11:40. So, Ian, you might be on duty Tuesday night if I suffer a reaction. But I'll be in touch. All right? All the best,
you'll
boys.
You'll be absolutely fine. Yeah. Ta-da, mate. Right. Cheers, everyone.
Bye. Stay safe.
Bye.